Most business survival stories you read are, frankly, they're polite lies written in hindsight.
Oh, absolutely. They always sound perfectly engineered.
Right. Like, if you are listening to this right now and you've ever had to steer a struggling project from the brink of disaster, or maybe you're managing a team that feels like it's actively sinking, you know, the traditional advice.
Yeah, the classic pull over and take a deep breath strategy.
Exactly. Your mentors tell you to bring in the consultants, draw up a beautiful color-coded Gantt chart, and execute this clean, rational recovery plan. But today, we are unpacking a framework that explains why pulling over is actually, well, the worst possible thing you can do.
It completely upends that whole comfort zone of the neat, heavily consulted turnaround.
It really does. So, welcome to another deep dive. Our mission today is to decode the actual brutal physics of survival.
And we have some fascinating source material for this.
Yeah, we are diving into a genuinely brilliant, though incredibly dense, strategic document. It's titled Recursive Turnaround Dynamics, or RTD for short.
Written by Doris Odit Achenga from Odit Frontier Partners in Kampala.
Right. And the core argument here just totally dismantles the myth of the perfectly engineered corporate rescue. Like, real recovery isn't a spreadsheet.
No, it's frantic. It's incredibly messy.
And it requires you to make massive, decisive moves while you were severely injured. So we're going to walk you through the four actual steps of survival: fall, reassess, rebuild, and recur.
Because the traditional playbook, you know, it treats a crisis like a pit stop in a race.
Right, like pull over and swap the tires.
Exactly. The engine is sputtering, the tires are worn out, so you pull into the garage, swap the parts, and get back on the track when you're fully repaired. But the fatal flaw in that analogy is that a failing organization is not sitting on a neutral game board waiting for you to fix it.
Because the clock is actively ticking against you. The document calls this the cliff clock, or temporal compression.
Which basically means you are physically running out of runway.
Right. The cash reserves are depleting, investor confidence is decaying, or your most vital partners are just quietly eyeing the exits.
And under that kind of severe temporal compression, a pause is actively destructive.
Wait, destructive. Not just unhelpful, but actually doing damage.
Yes, because entropy compounds automatically. I mean, while a leadership team is sitting offsite trying to draft the perfect recovery memo, the baseline deterioration doesn't stop.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
The trust of your stakeholders is evaporating with literally every hour of silence.
So, to update the metaphor, it's like you're driving a car that is currently on fire. Pulling over to the side of the road just guarantees that the fire catches up to the driver's seat.
That's a great way to put it.
You basically have to rebuild the engine while doing 80 miles an hour alongside a cliff.
Which is terrifying.
Right. That terrifies me, and I'm sure it terrifies anyone who's been in that hot seat. Because if standing still is a death sentence, the natural human reaction is just to start doing, well, doing stuff.
Flailing around to feel productive.
Yeah. We've all seen companies in crisis just launch into a frenzy of busy work.
We see this constantly, and RTD makes a really crucial distinction here between what it calls entropy motion and recursive motion.
Okay, break that down for us.
So entropy motion is the zombie system. It's an executive team launching a new logo rebrand or suddenly micromanaging remote work policies while the core business is hemorrhaging cash.
Just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Exactly. It creates the illusion of action, but it doesn't shift your survival probabilities 1 millimeter.
You're just burning whatever tiny bit of fuel you have left on friction, which means recursive motion would be the opposite, right?
Right. It has to be action that actually shifts the odds in your favor. Every single move you make has to make the subsequent conversion or the next sale slightly more likely to happen.
Okay, so the effort must alter the probability field.
If it doesn't change the likelihood of your survival tomorrow, it is entropy emotion.
Okay, but I'm looking at this and thinking about the paradox at the center of it. You're telling me, and you're telling the listener, that we have to sprint while the car is on fire.
Yes.
But if my company or my department is failing, I am out of gas. My team is exhausted. We're demoralized. Where does the energy for that sprint even come from?
Well, before any momentum can be engineered, a system has to look inward and run a diagnostic. The text calls this the sling principle.
The sling principle.
Yeah, before you try to throw the stone, you have to ask, Do we have enough muscle left to pull back the sling?
So we're hunting for the resources that haven't burned up yet.
Exactly. And Oda Tachenga labels this substrate. Substrate is the continuity-bearing structure that's still alive under the surface, even if the surface itself looks like a total disaster.
And there are a few different types of substrate, right?
Yes. The framework identifies six distinct forms. First, you have financial substrate, which is obvious, cash and liquidity.
Right, the bank account.
Then you have legitimacy, which is the trust and reputation you hold in the market. Coalition represents your allies, your loyal customers, the people who actually want you to exist.
Right.
Infrastructure covers your distribution channels and technical systems. Narrative is mindshare-like. Are people actively talking about you?
And the last one.
Cognitive, which measures the adaptability, intelligence, and sheer endurance of your leadership team.
Okay, but to survive a true crisis, I would assume you need most of those to be relatively intact. Like, mm-hmm. if I'm listening to this and I realize my startup has zero financial substrate and our infrastructure is outdated, I'm probably thinking the game is over.
And that's where the counterintuitive brilliance of the RTD framework comes in. Because you do not need all six to be healthy.
Wait, really?
A system can survive and even thrive with near zero financial substrate if its legitimacy, narrative, and cognitive substrates are incredibly dense.
Huh.
The survival cascade almost always ignites off a dormant or adjacent substrate that wasn't even part of your original business plan.
I'm struggling to buy that, honestly. Let's put ourselves in the shoes of a founder right now. If my team is completely burned out, so my cognitive substrate is cracking, we are missing payroll, which means financial substrate is gone and the financials are a crater. Forcing people to keep running under those conditions sounds incredibly toxic.
It can be.
It borders on delusion, right? Shouldn't a responsible leader just look at the board and shut it down rather than force everyone to run on a torn muscle?
Well, that is the ultimate ethical and strategic test of the operator. RTD calls it the terminal versus recoverable check.
Okay.
This framework absolutely does not romanticize survival for the sake of ego. If all six substrates are gone, if the bank accounts are empty, the market no longer trusts you, your coalition has vanished, and the leadership is totally paralyzed, the only correct strategic move is graceful termination.
You stop the bleeding, accept the loss, and let people go home.
Exactly. You shut the operation down to preserve the dignity and well-being of the human beings involved. But, and this is the key, if there is a pulse.
If even one single dormant substrate remains.
Right. Maybe you have a deep well of brand legitimacy that you haven't tapped, or a piece of proprietary infrastructure that a competitor desperately needs. If you have that, you can throw the sling.
And that's the torn muscle principle.
Yes. You do not wait for the muscle to heal. You walk, you jog, and then you sprint while you are still actively injured.
Man, walking on a torn muscle sounds agonizing. And practically speaking, if you're the one in the hot seat, the pressure is so immense that I imagine it's nearly impossible to even realize you still have that one working muscle.
Oh, it is. Because when the walls are closing in, everything just feels dead.
Right.
And the pressure physically distorts an operator's vision. The document labels this phenomenon collapse vector fixation.
Collapse vector fixation.
Under intense temporal compression, a leader's attention locks entirely onto whatever is actively dying.
Like the missed payroll.
Oh.
Or the investor screaming on the phone.
Or the collapsing merger deal, yeah.
It's like looking through binoculars from the wrong end. You get so hyper-fixated on the giant fire right in front of your face that the fire extinguisher
sitting quietly in the corner of the room completely vanishes from your field of vision.
You literally cannot see the tool that could save you because your neurology is entirely hijacked by the threat.
Exactly. So to overcome that perceptual blindness, leaders have to force themselves to use two distinct microscopes simultaneously during their reassessment phase.
Okay, two microscopes. What's the first one?
The first is delusion microscoping.
Okay, if the goal is to survive, delusion microscoping has to mean aggressively pruning away the lifelines we are lying to ourselves about.
Yeah.
Pruning the dead geometry.
Yes. Operators must brutally identify the elements of their business that they are emotionally attached to, but that are structurally dead.
Give me an example of that.
We're talking about high-status sponsors who promise the world over lavish dinners but never actually write a check. Or vanity metrics that look fantastic in a quarterly pitch deck, but do absolutely nothing for your cash flow or your coalition.
So you have to cut the dead weight to save the host, even if it hurts your ego. So if the first microscope is about blinding yourself to the fake lifelines, the second one has to be about finding the hidden real ones.
That's leverage microscoping. This is the hunt for the fire extinguisher. You're looking for dormant pathways that were always there, but you chronically underestimated their value when times were good.
Let's make that concrete for you, the listener, trying to save a failing project. What does an underestimated pathway actually look like?
Yeah.
I'm guessing it could be past clients who still have an immense amount of trust in your work, but you just haven't spoken to them in 2 years because you were chasing bigger accounts.
That's a perfect example. Or maybe overlooked intellectual property.
Like a secondary product line that everyone ignored because it wasn't the sexy flagship product, but it actually has incredible margins and loyal users.
Exactly. The substrate is rarely where you want it to be. It is where it actually is.
Okay, so we've cleared our vision. We use dilution microscoping to drop the vanity projects and leverage microscoping to find our surviving substrate.
We found the torn muscle.
Right. Now what? We have the fuel, but how do we actually move the vehicle?
We ignite the engine. Mm-hmm. And the core mechanic of RTD for this is the momentum cascade.
A cascade implies something triggering something else, compounding over and over, which makes sense. I mean, if winds were just additive, it would take far too long to climb out of the hole.
In a turnaround, winds are multiplicative. When you land one real conversion, it recursively changes the probability of the next conversion.
Because everyone else in the ecosystem is watching you. Like if I secure a highly respected industry partner, suddenly saying yes to me feels far less risky for the next vendor or the next recruit.
Exactly. The temperature of the room changes.
Yeah.
But to trigger that cascade under pressure, a leader cannot just drop one massive press release and pray it saves the company. You must engineer what Oda Dechenga calls serialized momentum. You don't make a single announcement. You unfold an ongoing story.
Like an episodic television show. Every week, there's a new development that keeps the audience hooked and proves you aren't dead yet.
Yes. A new key hire on Tuesday. A minor but crucial product update on Thursday. A strategic alignment the following Monday.
It adds undeniable density to your narrative.
It does. And the most radical claim in the entire document is that at advanced stages of a turnaround, the communications literally become the stabilization architecture.
Wait, I need to pause on that. The signal becomes the organism.
Yes.
If the communications are the architecture, does that mean the hype actually replaces the product until the product can catch up? Are we effectively just telling leaders to fake it till they make it?
Well, no, it's not about faking a product that doesn't exist. It's about maximizing the leverage of the substrate you do possess. And to achieve this under extreme time compression, systems deploy the RTD barbell strategy.
A barbell.
Mm-hmm.
Weight concentrated on two absolute extremes with zero weight in the middle.
Exactly. On one end of the barbell, you have highly elegant, carefully calibrated prestige signaling. This communication is aimed exclusively at strategic elite nodes.
The top tier investors.
Yeah.
The industry kingmakers.
Right.
The people who can fundamentally alter your legitimacy overnight with a single endorsement.
And then on the other end of the barbell, you execute brute force, desperate spray and hope. Probability saturation.
So just total volume.
You are knocking on every single door, sending thousands of cold emails, blanketing the lower tiers of the market, fully expecting 99% of those attempts to be ignored.
So there is no moderate middle ground. You don't waste time on generic marketing campaigns.
Not at all.
You are either whispering a very tailored high-status message to the kingmakers,
ooh,
or you are shouting with a megaphone in the town square hoping anyone hears you.
Exactly.
But to loop back to the danger of hype, if this barbell strategy generates massive visibility, but that visibility never converts into real financial or coalition substrate, the cascade eventually dies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Visibility is not viability.
The substrate gate always applies. The market will eventually check your math.
Let's assume the operator does it right. The barbell strategy works. You shout it in the square, you whisper it to the elites, and you spark that multiplicative cascade.
Okay.
What does that actually look like from the outside? How does the organization's dynamic with the world fundamentally shift?
It crosses a psychological threshold called legitimacy inversion.
Legitimacy inversion.
Yeah, early in a crisis, a company is begging for legitimacy.
Yeah.
Leadership is constantly asking the market, will you please support us? Will you please stay with us?
It is a position of extreme naked weakness.
But once the momentum cascade reaches critical mass, the polarity flips. The system stops seeking approval and starts allocating it.
Oh, wow.
The ecosystem's internal dialogue changes from should we support them to what does our absence cost us?
You become the cool kid's table.
Mm-hmm.
If a vendor or a partner isn't working with you, it suddenly looks like a strategic failure on their part, not yours. They're the ones missing out.
Participation becomes a status signal for the outside world. And the definitive proof that a system has achieved legitimacy inversion is a measurable topology change.
A topology change, like a structural shift in how the company absorbs damage.
Exactly. The exact same shock that would have killed the company in March is effortlessly absorbed by the swarm of distributed stabilizers in September.
Huh.
So if a major investor pulls out in March when you are fragile and isolated, it's a fatal blow.
But in September, because you've serialized this momentum and everyone else has bought into the narrative, the ecosystem just shrugs. It absorbs the loss, and someone else immediately takes that investor's place because they want a seat at the table.
Precisely.
Let's ground this for the listener with the case studies from the source material. Odit Achenga specifically contrasts OpenAI with WeWork to illustrate this, right?
Yes. OpenAI represents the perfect cascade in this framework. They ignited their turnaround using inherited substrate, which was their elite research reputation.
They had massive cognitive and legitimacy substrate from day one, even if their commercial financial model was still evolving.
Right. They released a product which instantly shifted developer density toward them. That developer density then shifted enterprise adoption.
It was a true recursive momentum cascade that created a self-protective mass almost instantly.
Now contract that with WeWork, which the document labels a spectacle system.
I'm looking at this and thinking, WeWork had massive momentum. They were the ultimate cool kids table for years. Everyone had FOMO.
They did.
From the inside of a chaotic company, how is a leader supposed to know if they're building an indestructible OpenAI cascade or just a WeWork spectacle that is doomed to implode?
The difference is the topology test. You must ruthlessly ask, are your shocks actually getting more survivable?
Right.
WeWork mastered serialized momentum. They utilized the barbell strategy perfectly to generate hype, but it was completely detached from real operational substrate.
Because the unit economics underneath the floorboards were horrific. They were just bleeding cash faster and faster with every new building they opened.
Exactly. The conversions they were getting, the massive press cycles, the escalating valuations weren't actually increasing their probability of long-term survival.
Wow.
When a real shock hit their pre-IPO financial disclosure, the topology hadn't fundamentally changed.
They were just as brittle as they were on day one. There was just dramatically more money at stake.
It was a false cascade. The moment the market checked the math, the entire geometry collapsed.
Which demands radical, painful honesty from whoever is running the show.
Yeah.
You have to know if you're actually building substrate or just blowing smoke to save your own ego.
Absolutely.
And that brings us to the human element of this entire physics engine. The organization might be stabilizing, but what is happening to the psychology of the person steering the ship?
RTD draws a fascinating and sharp distinction here between steward psychology and founder psychology.
Okay, let's start with the steward.
A hired steward, like a professional CEO brought in to fix things, is running against two clocks simultaneously.
The organizational entropy, so the company running out of money, and their own reputational entropy, because they don't want a catastrophic failure attached to their LinkedIn profile.
Right, so they will build a reputation firewall. A steward will fight aggressively to save the system, but their internal mandate ensures they are never fused to a terminal collapse.
Meaning they know when to pull the parachute.
Exactly. Once the system shows a baseline of stability and the bleeding stops, they frequently step away and hand it over to the next leader.
It's like the difference between a hired ship captain saving their own maritime license and a captain who built the boat with their bare hands.
Yeah.
The hired captain steps onto the dock the moment the ship is patched up in port.
Yeah.
The builder goes down with the wood.
Because founders experience identity fusion, the company is effectively a second body. And this provides an incredible evolutionary advantage during a crisis because it gives founders extreme endurance. They will generate force and absorb emotional pain long after a rational hired steward would have thrown in the towel.
Which is exactly the kind of irrational endurance you need to throw the sling and sprint on a torn muscle.
But it is a profound danger.
How so?
Because of that identity fusion, founders frequently lose the ability to recognize when the substrate is genuinely dead. They miss the signals for graceful termination.
Oh, so they keep trying to serialize momentum when there's absolutely nothing left to leverage.
Right.
And they just burn themselves, their investors, and their employees to the ground.
Sadly, yes.
But let's assume you aren't that founder.
Yeah.
Let's say you do it right. You embrace the torn muscle, you find the hidden leverage through your microscopes, you execute the barbell strategy, and you win the survival cycle. The project is saved.
Well, you cannot stay in that mode. This is the final major warning in the framework. RTD strictly separates compression mode from regenerative mode.
Compression mode being that bulldog state of sprinting while bleeding, like pure adrenaline and desperation.
High compression survival is an emergency state. It is not an operating system for daily life.
Right.
If an organism survives a crisis, stabilizes, and then immediately attempts to re-expand and conquer new markets without entering a regenerative mode to rebuild, it will die.
Because they haven't rebuilt the cognitive and financial substrates they burned during the sprint. The fuel tank is still empty.
Operators must consciously step back, drastically slow their cadence, and rebuild their reserves.
Or else what?
If you carry depleted emotional and financial reserves into the next grip cycle, the very next minor shock will be fatal. You simply cannot outrun entropy forever on an empty tank.
So if you're listening to this and you're in the middle of your own crisis right now, whether you're trying to salvage a megacorporation, a struggling team project, or even an individual career pivot, remember that turnarounds are not clean, rational plans drawn up on a whiteboard.
They really aren't. They are substrate games. You win by identifying the hidden leverage you still possess, aggressively pruning your delusions, and building serialized momentum until your ecosystem needs you more than you need it.
Fall. Reassess.
Yeah.
Rebuild. Recur.
Yeah.
It's a fractal framework that applies at almost any scale of human endeavor.
It really is.
But there is one final concept from the source material that we haven't touched on yet, and is what I want to leave you with today.
Oh, right. Because everything we've discussed so far assumes the ultimate goal is continuation recurrence.
Right. How to save the organism as it currently exists.
Mm-hmm.
How to put out the fire in the car. But Oda Dukenga also outlines something called phoenix recurrence.
Reconstituting as a completely new entity.
So I want you to ponder this as you go back to whatever challenges you are facing. We've spent this entire deep dive talking about how to save the current structure of your business or your project.
Yeah.
But what if the most adaptive, brilliant move you can make isn't surviving in your current form at all? What if you should let the current geometry die, shed all that dead weight, and allow a phoenix recurrence, using only your surviving, strongest substrate to build something entirely new? Sometimes, the ultimate turnaround strategy isn't fixing the engine at 80 miles an hour on a cliffside. Sometimes the bravest thing you could do is let the old version of you burn and walk away from the wreck.